McLean would rather they get behind the team.
You see it happen a few times in games, and I just don't see the point behind it, because throwing tennis balls on the pitch is going to get someone what they change. Well, I just think it's stupid, and you're just disrupting the game, and I just don't see any benefit there to it whatsoever.
Former Republic of Ireland striker Niall Quinn thinks John Delaney's time with the FAI should be over. The 92-time capped attacker, who used to be chairman at Sunderland, has criticised Delaney's move to a newly created post and says he won't be applying for the vacant role of chief executive. For fellow former Irish international Jonathan Walters and the ex-Ireland manager Owen Hand have also called for Delaney to leave the association. England manager Gareth Southgate say the FA will complain to UEFA after alleging that at least one of his players was targeted with racist abuse during last night's 5-1 win in Montenegro. And Ronan O'Gara has denied he is moving closer to joining the coaching staff of the French rugby team. He admits he is open to a move, though. The former Ireland number 10 has been rumoured to join the backroom team of Jacques Brunel on a temporary basis for the duration of the World Cup. O'Gara is currently backs coach with the Super Rugby side of the Crusaders in Canterbury. For offtheball.com on Newstalk, I'm Ross Lindsay.
News Talk weather.
Thanks to Des Kelly Interiors, the wood floor experts, supplying and fitting your new wood floor.
It'll be dry and cold today. There will be some clear skies developing later this morning. Lowest temperatures 0 to 5 degrees. I'll have more for you with Shane and Kieran on News Talk Breakfast from 7, but now it's time for Vincent Wall and Breakfast Business.
Breakfast Business.
With Enterprise Ireland. The outcome of Brexit may not be a given. Preparing for it should be. Prepareforbrexit.ie.
It's 6:31. You're welcome to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. Coming up on this morning's programme, capital from Connecticut. The New England state comes looking for investment opportunities in young Irish tech businesses. Why Irish businesses need to retrain existing staff and explore alternatives to our third level colleges to fill the growing digital skills gap. And we review latest developments on the markets. Now let's first have a look at some of the stories making headlines in the newspapers this morning. The main headlines, obviously, that ESRI report out this morning on the impact, the even more negative impact than anticipated of a no-deal Brexit. I think you're going to hear a lot about that in the main news bulletin, so we'll leave it to them. The Irish Times reports on that Apple extravaganza, that much heralded Apple extravaganza in Cupertino, California last night, where it unveiled its planned new range of services, from streamed TV services to a new digital and physical credit card and a new news and magazine app that will offer up to 300 major digital titles for a subscription of $10 per month. That's coming to Europe before the end of the year, they say. Market not particularly impressed. The share price of Apple actually closing more than 1% lower last night. Now, market's generally not hugely enthusiastic at the moment, but that range of announcements from Apple, which didn't give too much detail on the price it'll charge for its streaming services and for its credit card, market's not too enthusiastic just yet about where that's going. That story covered in the Irish Times and all other papers. Also in the Irish Times, the news that Hatch Hall in Dublin, currently in use as a direct provision centre, is to become a five-star hotel, with the company behind Ashford Castle to make a substantial investment in the building formerly owned by the Jesuit Order. The listed building in Dublin 2, just off Leeson Street, which opened in 1913, was used for 90 years as a hall of residence for UCD students. The Red Carnation Group, which has spent more than 75 million euro on an extensive renovation of Ashford Castle since 2015, made the announcement at a company event in London on Sunday night. As I say, that building, currently used by the Department of Justice as one of just two direct provision centres in the Greater Dublin area. Also in the Irish Times, they report that Boeing seems to be getting closer to some sort of resolution to its MAX 737 issue. It's invited more than 200 global airline pilots, technical leaders and regulators for an information session tomorrow, as it looks to return the 737 MAX to commercial service. The meeting is a sign that Boeing's planned software patch is nearing completion, though it will still need regulatory approval, and not just in the United States, but also in most other countries where it plans to fly. Speaking of aircraft, and I suppose directly in competition with Boeing, Airbus has agreed a multi-billion dollar deal with China to sell a package of 300 aircraft to that country, strengthening the European aerospace group's foothold in the world's second largest aviation market. Now coming up, the state of Connecticut comes bearing possible gifts for Irish startup businesses. And Jim Cassidy of the Code Institute sets out an alternative educational and training model to fill the digital skills gap impacting Irish businesses. Stay tuned.
News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR, Ireland's first mobile network to launch Wi-Fi calling, eliminating coverage black spots in your home or office.
Welcome to the Ford Innovate 191 sales event. Driving better SUV value for you. Take the incredible Ford Kuga. Featuring Ford Sync with touchscreen, smartphone mirroring, leather trim and key-free system. And right now, you can order a 191 Ford Kuga with an amazing 7-year warranty, 7-year roadside assistance and 2 years free servicing. All from just €28,450. Ford Innovate. Driving better value for you. See it for yourself at your local participating Ford dealer. Offer ends March 31st. Ford, go further. Price excludes delivery and related charges. Terms and conditions apply. See Ford.ie for details.
This Irish success story is brought to you by Guaranteed Irish.
Did you know that Ming Conn and Shannon created the drill used to rescue 33 Chilean miners trapped underground for 69 days in 2010? Global innovators Ming Conn, the driller's choice, also supports 106 jobs in the Midwest. Guaranteed Irish helps you support companies that are altogether better choices for our communities. So, look out for it. GuaranteedIrish.ie. Altogether better.
O'Callaghan Collection has four hotels located in the heart of Dublin city centre, perfect for every occasion. Shopping sprees on Grafton Street, conferences in the high-tech event spaces, and private dining experiences that will keep you coming back for more. Visit O'CallaghanCollection.com.
Breakfast Business.
With Enterprise Ireland. The outcome of Brexit may not be a given. Preparing for it should be. Prepareforbrexit.ie.
It's 6:36, you're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. Now, my first guest this morning hails from the state of Connecticut, just north of New York City, in the northeastern United States. He'll be the guest speaker at a meeting of the Irish International Business Network, IIBN, tomorrow evening here in Dublin, where he'll outline an interesting business proposition that he's going to give us a flavour of now. Douglas Roth, Managing Director of Connecticut Innovations, you're very welcome, thanks for coming in. Who are Connecticut Innovations and what are you offering to certain Irish businesses?
Well, thank you very much for having me. Connecticut Innovations is an early stage venture capital firm. We're actually one of the most active investors in the Northeast, investing upwards of $50 million a year in both life science and technology startups. And we're doing about 100 transactions a year, both follow-on investments in our existing portfolio as well as investing in new companies. And we were originally established by the state of Connecticut to both help launch and grow and accelerate young companies, and through those efforts generate some economic development benefits back to the state of Connecticut. One of the things that we recognized very early on is that Connecticut clearly does not have a monopoly on energetic, passionate, creative entrepreneurs. There are great investment opportunities outside of Connecticut, outside of the United States.
Including down the road in New York City, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah. And we recognize there's great opportunities in Europe and elsewhere where those companies begin to scale and look at the United States and realize it's the biggest market for what they do, or the most strategic market for what they do.
And also where they may actually tap into a lot of investment capital if the market buys into what they're trying to do.
Exactly. It's not just a market for customers, it's a market for talent, it's a market for capital. And so Venture Clash is sort of our vehicle, if you will, to promote Connecticut as a landing point for these young companies to come and land and expand their business in the United States. It's our way of promoting Connecticut Innovations as an investor, and it's our way of, in a sense, gamifying the deal flow and due diligence process that early stage investors go through.
Now, you mentioned it there, Venture Clash, which Connecticut Innovations manages. It's effectively an annual, what, $5 million pot of potential investment capital that tech startups globally, including Ireland, can actually compete for.
Yeah, so the idea is that we've established this pool of capital that we're, you know, ready, willing, and able to invest in some young companies that come through our Venture Clash process. And you know, rough numbers, we get about 300-400 companies that sort of enter between now and June 7th. and we take them through a three-phase project, the process that culminates October 17th. Yale University will host our finals. It's a bit like Dragon's Den, Shark Tank in the States, but Dragon's Den, where the 10 companies that have been narrowed down as finalists pitch their businesses in front of a room of a few hundred individuals and some prominent VCs. And of those 10, we will work with them to complete due diligence and structure an investment in their company.
And for those listening in who may be interested or know people who may be interested but who may be put off by the fact that this is a global competition, mm-hmm. with, as you say, perhaps up to 300 entrants, there is a very strong record of Irish companies getting through. We had Cloud KPI, Maeve Neefsi's Cloud KPI last year, getting $500,000 investment from you guys, Davra Networks the year before.
That's correct. What we've found is everything is a learning process, not just for the entrepreneurs, but for the investors as well. And what we learned through this process is there are certain geographies where it is a little bit easier to do a deal. I mean, there are creative entrepreneurs everywhere in the world. Some geographies have a more mature support network in terms of investors and others that help the entrepreneurial ecosystem. What we found is there are certain geographies, such as Ireland and Dublin in particular, where there are high density of entrepreneurship. There's early stage investors that will help the companies get to a stage where they are then ready to expand internationally. And there's sufficient talent to help those companies grow even beyond. So,
because there are caveats in this. I mean, mm-hmm. while you will offer anything up to $1 million for the winning company and other smaller amounts for those who get to the final stages, they will need matching investment capital themselves, and they will need to establish some sort of operation in Connecticut.
That's correct. So, obviously, we were established by the state of Connecticut 30 years ago, and the sort of requirement of any of our investments is that the company establish and maintain a Connecticut presence. So, the case of international companies, what we're looking is that they will create their U.S. headquarters. We fully expect that they will keep, as in Davra's case, keep the dev team here in Dublin and establish its U.S. base of operations in Connecticut and grow from there.
If there are startup companies, as many of these are, that doesn't need to be too extensive. I mean, that literally could be one or two people and grow there, could it?
It could, exactly. And we expect that the vision is that it could grow both in terms of numbers and as well as in terms of functional roles within the company.
There are other supports that you can offer as well to the successful companies, mentoring opportunities mm-hmm. to meet other potential investors over time, relatively cheap office accommodation compared to the larger cities like LA and New York.
Absolutely. And so we try and make the landing in Connecticut, in the United States, as easy as possible by lining up all of those resources from various co-working spaces in different cities around Connecticut, as well as connecting them with, whether it's mentors, there's certainly going to be some legal support in terms of establishing that U.S. entity, possibly visa support if someone from Ireland is going to be responsible for launching that office. And then all of the other pieces that, quite frankly, entrepreneurs, they're focused on running the business. We don't want them spending a lot of time on all of the details. So we try and plug them in to those support networks that can take care of those details for them so they can just run their business.
And effectively, any sort of a tech or digital company, whether it be in fintech, medtech, or any other of the techs, that's what you're looking for.
So Connecticut Innovations will invest very, very broadly on both the life sciences, from new drugs to the tech side. But with Venture Clash specifically, we've identified four industry verticals that, quite frankly, if you're a business in one of these four verticals, Connecticut has a very compelling story as to why you should land there. And that includes InsurTech. Hartford is the insurance capital of the U.S., fintech, digital health, and industry 4.0. Any of those sectors, I think companies would do very well in Connecticut.
Okay, you have a flavor of that. Anybody out there interested or know people who are in that space who may be looking for some capital and a beachhead in the United States, in the northeastern United States? Doug Roth, Managing Director of Connecticut Innovations, thanks for coming into us. And you'll be talking at the IIBN meeting in Beecham Solicitors in Dublin Docklands tomorrow night.
Wednesday evening, that's
7 o'clock. And for people interested in that, register on IIBN.com. Best of luck and thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Now back home now, as digital skills and expertise become more vital for businesses of every scale and sector, the scarcity of skilled digital employees continues to grow in Ireland and elsewhere. The Code Institute, the Irish-based provider of fast-track digital skills courses, has just published a white paper or broad-ranging discussion document entitled The Digital Skills Crisis, Time to Act. And Jim Cassidy, Code Institute Chief Executive, joins us in the studio. Jim, this white paper, it's an extensive document. I've gone through it. It's very impressive. It lays out just the extent of the digital skills crisis being faced across Europe and in Ireland.
Yeah, well, good morning, Vincent. It does indeed. You know, essentially what we're trying to highlight here is, well, both the opportunity, the problem that we face, and then the solutions that we can try and deal with this problem. By 2020, there's expected to be a shortfall of approximately 1.2 million jobs available across Europe, and that's growing to over 4 million by 2030. So, you know, the traditional education and the outflow of graduates from traditional universities and colleges just isn't meeting the demand placed on it by industry. So the goal of this document is to highlight this to industry and to essentially point to some solutions.
It's your contention that businesses, their HR departments, their learning and development departments, and I suppose smaller businesses that don't have specific departments like that as well, need to look to other sources of employees to fill this skills gap, including existing employees who may be on their books but who don't have digital training as things stand.
Correct, absolutely. So I guess the way we look at it is that, what companies need to do is they need to look at the roles that are becoming available and then look at the skill sets that are required. So if you look traditionally at the STEM education in third level, it tends not to focus on sort of job readiness. So, you know, there's an opportunity there for L&D, HR departments to look at things differently. So my background before I was involved with this company would have been in a digital agency, and we would have always gone to hire the people, you know, the entry level people with 3 to 5 years experience. And the problem with that is that you're not actually increasing the pipeline of talent. So what we'd be saying to people is, you know, you need to broaden that scope of talent. You need to essentially bring more people in, put better training and development pathways in for people as they're coming into an organization, but then also look within the organization and see, well, are there people who might be in customer services that might have an interest, for instance, in technology or in other areas that might want to upskill or, you know, cross-skill essentially into a new job?
A lot of employees, whether they be in their mid-20s or whatever, with some work experience under their belt, may be put off by the perceived complexity of software development or other coding skills.
Sure, that could be the case. We don't find that now. I have to say we find that there's a huge demand. So we're currently we have a presence in Ireland, the UK, Netherlands, the Nordics, and then in North America and Asia as well. And what we find is actually there's a massive demand. The people who tend to go for these courses are looking to change career. They're looking to, create a better future for themselves. But what we'd say to anyone out there who's considering it, you know, you don't have to be a mathematician to become a software developer. You need to be a problem solver. So if you're a good natural problem solver, then software development could be the way forward.
Your message in the document also is to HR departments, to learning and development departments, that a lot of the roles that they're advertising there, that they require 3 to 5 years experience, those roles may not be actually 3 to 5 years old, or the technology or expertise to back them up may not actually be in existence for 3 to 5 years. So they have unrealistic expectations.
That's absolutely true. So, you know, people within software development, you could become an expert in a given area within a matter of years. If you essentially jump on that new tech early on, you can be the expert in a very short period of time. What we'd also say is that, you know, that the requirement for a degree for an awful lot of these roles, just, it's no longer the case. And thankfully, we're seeing some companies, the likes of, you know, Apple, Google, who are changing their policies now to say, actually, well, you don't need a degree. And, you know, what you do need is you need the applicable skills, you need the applicable knowledge, you need to be job ready. And that's what we're trying to promote. We're trying to say to organisations and industry, you know, look for the skills that, I suppose, allow the people to do the job, that they're able to do the job, and hire on that basis, not tick the box based on they went to this university, that they have a first from wherever it might be.
Your document goes out of its way to say that you're not being critical of the third level institutions in Ireland, but you do point out that technology and technological digital skills, coding skills, are changing so rapidly that the timescale involved in some of our third level courses are just not realistic.
Well, look, that's part of the reason we exist. You know, so the universities, it takes sometimes 5, 6, 7 years for them to update their courseware. We update our courseware 4 times every year. So, you know, you have to keep up to speed. If you don't, you will get left behind, and essentially you'll be teaching skills that are out of date.
You've segued to my last point, Jim. You're not a charity. You haven't brought this out for philosophical reasons.
No.
You're basically saying to HR departments, to business management teams, come to us. We can provide what a diploma, a university accredited diploma in 14 months or so.
That's right. But we're saying that, but we're also saying to them that we want them to come along to us and to take a look at our graduates. You know, so we want them to hire our graduates. We want them to be open minded as to where their talent pipe comes from. So yes, we absolutely want them to look at our diploma as a mechanism for training their staff, but also we want to come to them as a fantastic resource for talent.
How much would your courses cost?
It's
for either companies paying for them or individuals going out there?
It's €5,500.
And how much learning do they get for that?
600 hours. It's more coding than someone would do in a traditional software engineering course.
Okay, it's an interesting document. It certainly sets out the challenge we're facing in finding appropriate skills, particularly as automation and artificial intelligence increasingly dominates the workplace as well. Jim Cassidy, Chief Executive of the Code Institute, thanks for coming in to us. Coming up, Alan Breen of Cantor Fitzgerald on markets. Stay tuned.
News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
Get the latest News Talk podcasts at newstalk.com and on the News Talk app.
As always the way, just when you need to buy a new appliance, your bank account goes, ha, no chance, sure, 3 weeks till payday, you big idiot. That's when you turn to Flexify, with 0% APR at appliances delivered. Washing machines, kettles, get Flexify on appliances between 80 and €499.99. These terms and conditions apply, subject to minimum purchase amount, credit assessment and approval. See appliancesdelivered.ie.
What does the next wave of disruptive technologies mean for your business? Find out at Futurescope 2019, Ireland's number one innovation event, taking place on March 28th in the Convention Centre. Meet Ireland's most exciting innovators and understand the emerging technologies influencing your business, from AI to 5G. This is your opportunity. Take it. Secure your ticket at futurescope.ie. Futurescope, brought to you by Dublin Business Innovation Centre.
In today's Farming Independent, we look at how farmers can cut costs and guarantee water supply by digging their own wells. In property, Jim O'Brien reports on a €2.4 million land sale in the southeast. And as pesticides come under increasing scrutiny, Darren McCullough says farmers need to start planning for a future without chemicals. Farming Independent, only in Tuesday's Irish Independent. Take a fresh look.
News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Giving your business more savings with our latest broadband and mobile bundles.
This is News Talk.
It's 6:53. You're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall, and Alan Breen of Cantor Fitzgerald joins us to discuss markets. Alan, after a strong recovery in share prices in the first 2 to 3 months of the year, that move by the Federal Reserve in the United States last week, that announcement that they wouldn't be increasing interest rates, perhaps for at least a calendar year, it seems to have spooked markets, doesn't it? Share prices falling across the world, and bond yields falling as well.
Good morning, Vincent. Yeah, there's a lot going on. We've had a very strong rally from our December lows, which is well discussed. The Federal Reserve U-turn was actually quite dramatic, in fairness. I mean, the federal funds futures show now a 73% chance of a rate cut by the year end, as opposed to what we saw.
Which is a real vote fast on their part.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was up from only 54%, say, on Friday, for example, and only 13% a month ago. So the change in tone in global central banks is definitely a massive consideration. I suppose what the market is kind of getting their heads around, we've had some softening economic data on Germany. In Germany on Friday, we had very poor PMI data, and that involved then the German 10-year bond going into negative territory for the first time in a couple of years as well. So basically, the market is trying to get its head around whether the Federal Reserve, for example, the ECB, are changing course because of
they see something that the market doesn't see.
Exactly, and further negativity to come. And also with the inversion in bond yields as well, generally speaking, when the US 10-year bond has actually gone below 3-month money, effectively what that shows is generally a sign of a potential recession. So I suppose the market's trying to get its head around whether this is a near-term blip or whether this is a longer-term concern and whether we're going into a new territory. I suppose it's too early to say, in fairness. We've only had a relatively recent poor set of numbers. We've got a lot going on as well. Let's not forget the US-Chinese trade impasse has a massive impact as well on near-term sentiment and economic data, and also the Brexit consideration as well. So there's a lot going on at the moment. So whether it's a short-term blip or a longer-term concern, I suppose the data will let us know in time.
Because on the one hand, that announcement by the Federal Reserve that there wouldn't be an interest rate increase, and perhaps, no, they didn't announce it, but the market anticipating perhaps an interest rate cut, there won't be an interest rate increase in Europe for a year either. That should be good news generally for equity markets. But as you say, there is this secondary consideration that perhaps the central banks know that things are slowing down a lot quicker than others. That idea of the inverted bond, that effectively means that investors are not prepared to go out 5-10 years because the future is so uncertain.
Exactly, and they're happy to take a shorter term. And again, it is a sign of real near-term uncertainty. But you're right. I mean, we have had a strong run of markets as well. Let's not forget we're coming into a bit of a lull period as well. Aside from the global macro issues, which are very clear and very obvious, earnings season will kick off in the next couple of weeks again, so we get a real sense of what corporate Europe is doing and how it's impacting what's going on as well. We do actually, it's worth bearing in mind, we kick off on a blackout period for share buybacks. We've had significant share buybacks
last year.
Which
has supported share
prices. Exactly, so that's worth bearing in mind. So there is potential. I suppose if you look at it as well, a more dovish Federal Reserve, for example, does mean more kind of risk on, i.e. you're forced out the risk curve or equities, to generate some level of return. So there aren't, it's not all negative, I suppose, and in theory it should be good for risk assets and equities, but there is a lot of uncertainty as well, so just worth bearing in mind.
Finally, that big extravaganza in Cupertino last night, much heralded Apple's announcement of a whole range of new digital services as distinct from hardware or equipment. Market kind of nonplussed in the short term, at least. Share price down about 1% last night.
Yeah, it was down almost 2%. A few initiatives, it had been well flagged, Vincent, as well. Again, we've had a strong rally into this announcement, well-leaked information as well. I suppose the main key headlines, Apple TV, a new subscription service for original programs. But what's key in a lot of it was that Apple News Plus as well. We had Apple Arcade, which is a new subscription gaming service, and Apple Credit Card, where Apple have teamed up with Goldman Sachs for a new initiative on that as well. It was well flagged. What they're trying to do, I suppose, is come away from the volatility inherent with their Apple products like Apple, the iPhone, Apple Watch, etc., which can be somewhat volatile. Service revenue is going to be very important for them going forward as well. They have a significant balance sheet and a massive war chest to be able to look at all these initiatives, but very light on actual detail. Apple News Plus, where they've come on board with the Wall Street Journal, they're charging $9.99, but elsewhere in their subscription models, very little on cost, very little on further programming and the cost and the expenditure going forward as well. Will they go toe-to-toe with Netflix, for example, on original content? They spend $10 billion a year. So light on detail, but good on initiative. And in theory, service revenue is very good for the business going forward.
Okay. Comprehensive as always. Alan Breen of Cantor Fitzgerald, thanks for joining us. That's it from Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall for this morning. Back with bulletins at 7:30 and 8:30. Coming up after the traffic news, over to Kieran and Shane with all the stories of the morning on News Talk Breakfast. Stay with us.
News Talk Traffic and Travel.
Thanks to Just Eat. Tap the app to order food. It couldn't be easier. Just Eat. Find your flavour.